Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network on Zone Coverage MN on Twitter. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me at Brandon_Warren. And we are thrown right into the middle of hot stove season. Well, technically we should be, but only one player has signed so far. Yusmiro Petit signing a two-year deal with a third-year option with the Oakland A's. So to that end, we still have a lot of intrigue and a lot of time to predict and project and all that sort of thing as far as how we think free agency is going to pan out. And with that in mind, we have brought John Becker back to the show. John, where can we find you both in terms of writing and on Twitter?
So you can find me on Twitter at @JohnBecker_. I help maintain the MLB depth charts and team info pages at Roster Resource. I write for MLB Daily Dish, which is Chris Cotillo's SB Nation website. And I'm also helping out Ryan Thibodeau with his awesome Hall of Fame tracker this ballot season.
Yeah, that's got to be a lot of fun. Another thing that dominates the news cycle during the off season is, will they vote yes or no for specific players? There's always the cloud of steroid suspicion with certain guys, whether it's justified or not. And so we've seen some ballots trickle in so far. That'll continue to speed up here as the winter rages on. So first of all, I mentioned we have seen one player sign, Petit, with the A's. Level of surprise for you on that signing?
I'm never really surprised when the A's give a two-year, $10 million deal to a reliever. That kind of just seems like their range and what they do. And they clearly needed some bullpen help. I think that he's a good bridge guy to have. You know, can give you 2-3 innings in the middle or could start occasionally if needed.
Is it possible that that means that the relief market will be semi-reasonable this year? I mean, Petit's not Kenley Jansen or anything, don't get me wrong, but $5 million for a guy who had a pretty nice year last year is pretty reasonable.
I think he's a strange case because he just had the best season of his career in his age 32 season, and he filled so many different roles that it's hard to put a price on him. So I'm not really sure if that'll depress the relief market so much as he's an interesting case that maybe was underappreciated by some teams and allowed the A's to kind of jump in.
Yeah, that sounds like the quintessential A's case. I think it'll end up being, you know, a fairly reasonable signing, not much risk, and they can flip him if so needed. I believe he led the relief the relievers, he led all relievers last year in innings pitched. And so, now that Anthony Swarzak's no longer filling that role for teams like the Twins, he's kind of that guy who can give you a few innings here or there and does a pretty nice job. So, yeah, that's something the A's are going to definitely need. so we got you on today to talk about your top 30 free agents and where you think they'll land. My gut says that we're going to get through about 15 of these today and then do 15 in the next day or so. But obviously, your list is a little different than anybody else's. What, with your methodology, is it looking at a lot of other lists and then kind of making your own or starting from scratch? How do you do it?
So the list that I look at, the three big ones are Keith Laws at ESPN, Jeff Passan's at Yahoo, and then MLB Trade Rumors Top 50. Mm-hmm. MLB Trade Rumors essentially just goes by expected largest contract to, all the way down, which I like their contract estimates. I don't necessarily know if that's the best way to rank free agents. I think that there's some guys who might earn a little bit less that I would put above some other guys, although I do think, you know, at a bare minimum, that's a good way to go. Keith Law seems to go from a more scouting perspective, what he sees in the players, what he, you know, kind of predicts that their future will be based on what he's seen from them and their mechanics and things like that.
As an aside, I thought his ratings were a little strange.
They are. They're strange, but I get where he's coming from, and I think he weights pretty heavily towards the age of the player and the athleticism of the player that he sees. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jeff Passan, I would say, is the most holistic ranking, judging by the way he wrote. So it's a combination of what the market might give the player, what he thinks of the player, and how the player's performed most recently.
So would you say yours is kind of like a mix of the three?
Yeah, I you know, I'm not a scout like Keith Law, but I do consider, you know, expected contract. I think that what the player will receive on the open market with how smart teams are getting, you know, pretty well reflects how good of a free agent they are. But, you know, I also just go by, if I was building a team from scratch, who would I want on my team the most? Who would I want on my team the least? And I weight pretty heavily towards most recent performance. You know, I'm kind of big on breakouts and stuff like that. And also, mm-hmm. I'm not in the market of predicting the player 4 years down the line, so I'm not really concerned about that as much as some other people might be.
How you know, how hard is it to differentiate relief value? Because that, you know, one thing I did was a power ranking for the best fits of the Twins in free agency, and for me, ranking relievers was particularly difficult because you have to factor in age, injuries, expectations, roles, and, you know, where they pitched, how long they were there, how long they've been good for. And there's a lot of things that go into that. And so I think it's a difficult thing to do. You've got some relievers on your list, but not as many as people might expect. Were there some guys close as far as relievers that you would have put in if maybe they had a little bit more, you know, a little more consistency? Or you know, how hard was it for you to rank relievers specifically?
It was hard. I mean, the only guys I knew that I was going to have on my top 30 before I even started it was Wade Davis, Greg Holland, Addison Reed, Mike Minor, and Brandon Morrow. But, you know, I ended up throwing Pat Neshek in there. I had Juan Nicasio in there. And there were a lot that I considered that were just left off at the end. It's incredibly hard because so much of the relief pitching market is based on, you know, what have you done for me lately and not any sort of track record. So, I strongly considered Anthony Swarzak and Jake McGee and Brian Shaw and Tommy Hunter and Brandon Kinsler, but you know, there are just so many names that, you know, I felt, and especially ranking them amongst position players who play every day, it's kind of hard to reconcile in your mind. Okay, is this relief pitcher who's a completely different player than this first baseman better or worse than him?
Yeah, so to that end, you'd rather have a Yonder Alonso or a Gerard Dyson as opposed to a Brian Shaw, at least based on your ratings.
Yeah, but, you know, you ask me another day and I might change my mind. It's hard. It really is.
Well, we happen to be asking you on this day, which is perfect for our recording purposes. I want to ask you about your process. So let's just say you know a team needs to add a starting pitcher. The easy option for me is the Minnesota Twins because I think it would be nice for them to have a third arm, not necessarily third in the hierarchy. But if you go into a postseason series with Jose Berríos, Ervin Santana, and blank, whether it's Yu Darvish, Lance Lynn, whoever, you can probably give teams trouble in a playoff series. It's not to say you're going to win that series, but if you build up your bullpen and you are going to go in with those three starters, you at least have a chance. Would you tend to agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that three, I guess I would call them pitchable in the postseason starters, is the bare minimum for what you want to have.
Yeah.
And that's just for the division series. I think after that, you're going to want four. So obviously with the Twin situation right now, just Santana and Berríos is obviously not going to cut it.
So if you know a team needs a starter and you know there's five starters, are you, you know, when you make all your picks, are you thinking, okay, I'm at this third starter that I've ranked and I've already said the Twins are signing a starter, but I'm going to say two to the Twins, knowing that they won't sign both, but then I'm going to have a better chance of being right? You know what I mean? Like, the MLB Trade Rumors contest will tell you how many right out of 50 you get, and I'm sure the winner every year probably has like 12 or something crazy like that. Would you prefer to list three starters to the Twins knowing you might get one, or would you rather go Twins with one and then Cubs with another and Orioles with another, hypothetically, you know, as far as stabs in the dark, as opposed to, you know, muscling up on specific teams knowing they need one of those guys?
Yeah, so I don't try to do it in a vacuum. I think that's too easy. So I kind of let the predictions play off each other. In that, for example, I predicted Lorenzo Cain to the Giants, so I didn't also predict JD Martinez to the Giants, even though I'd say they're fairly likely to sign one of the two.
Yeah.
I'd rather kind of have a, like, oh, this is what the league could look like after free agency is over, picture in my mind, instead of, you know, well, it could look like this, could look like this, and oh, I didn't predict anyone to this team. So, you know, I it's a lot harder that way, but it's more fun to just kind of have that, I think, better outlook once you're done kind of picking teams for people.
So how about with relievers? Is it different then? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, if you can either go the process where everyone needs relievers and so it's really difficult to pick, or also, obviously, you know, the Dodgers need to work on their bridge to Jansen a little bit, especially with Brandon Morrow on free agency. And you know the Nationals, especially losing Kinsler to free agency and how everything looked for them in the bullpen last year, you know, how that looked. You could have a tendency to mock every reliever to them with some degree of certainty. So is relief pitching the same way for you, or is it a little different?
Yeah, I think the three bins you can throw teams into is needs a closer, needs support for their closer, or doesn't have enough money for the big guns. So what are the lower level relievers that they could make plays for?
And obviously, assuming we did up to top 50 and there were more of these guys on the list.
Right. And then at a certain point, you know, you get down to the, you know, even below Brian Shaw, you know, you get to the, I don't know, Brian Dunsing, David Hernandez, Fernando Rodney, Bud Norris, Sergio Romo. It's like, okay, all 30 teams could sign him. So it's tough.
Well, and that's why you and I in our discussion said, yeah, let's not go past 30 either, because then you're probably just kind of, you know, throwing darts in the dark, which is not helpful. So the last thing I want to ask you before we get into the rankings, back to my Twins power rankings. So I had Shohei Ohtani number one. I think if you were to power rank the free agency targets for any team in the big leagues, it has to be Ohtani number one based on, I called it cost to potential ratio, but there's no way anyone is higher than Ohtani on any team's power ranking for who they should be targeting in the offseason. Is that pretty much where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a good point that Jeff Passan made in his article, I believe 2 days ago, on why the offseason has been so slow and why it's not Ohtani, is that the most will cost a team is the posting fee of $20 million, then their $3 million from their bonus pool at most, and then the minimum salary to actually pay him during the season. So
yeah, I mean,
he's
going to be on the six-year plan, right? I mean, just like any other player.
Right. And it's not going to be holding up anyone's offseason. So I think that he's the number one target because of that, because you can go out and make moves right now. And there's no way you won't have money for Ohtani, you know, even if you were to go out and make a big splash today for, let's say, Yu Darvish.
So hypothetically, though, you know, when it comes to, like, betting on a World Series winner, it's very rare you have one team and then the field. Is there one team and then the field with Ohtani? I mean, I don't want you to tip your hand because we're going to talk about that, obviously, on another show, but I still feel like it's really hard to pick one team out.
Yeah, it's impossible. I think there are, you know, 10 or so teams that we've heard connected to him more so just because of how much the team's front office likes him. But obviously, you know, the money, which is usually a very good gauge for who's going to be interested, who's going to be able to get him, isn't a factor here.
Well, and you also haven't heard much from him.
Right.
And there's no big league connections other than Darvish, which is we don't know. That's nebulous at best, because I thought I heard someone say that the Japanese culture maybe doesn't necessarily want to follow in someone else's footsteps. You want to kind of pave your own way. I don't know how true that is, and that might be me putting words in someone's mouth. But I just think there's so many things that we don't know that to pick one team is going to be very difficult when we get to the end of these end of this series.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to say every team's chance is perfectly equal, 100% divided by 30, but it's about as close as I've ever seen based on, you know, how little we know from Ohtani and how little each team will have to commit to acquiring him.
Yeah, so I think he's number one no matter what. I have Yu Darvish number two. I said consensus best starter on the market. It looks like you agree based on your rankings. I think he's got more potential in there in that, you know, His command has gotten better as he's gotten older, and he throws so many pitches with so many delivery, arm slots and all that stuff. And if he stops tipping pitches, if that's the thing that's really gotten him beat up in a couple of the rough starts he's had, it's really hard for me to see someone like him at his age being better than that. Now, based on WAR, I think he's like a 4.5 or 4.6 WAR per 200 inning pitcher. To me, that's not an ace. I mean, that's a really great number two, low end one, but you're going to pay $26, $28 million for a guy who is not Clayton Kershaw and is not Max Scherzer. You know, where do you stand with Darvish?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think that when he's at his best, he can be one of the best pitchers in baseball, but I think he's inconsistent too often to warrant being an ace. I think
he's his own worst enemy in some ways, because his repertoire is so difficult to decode for hitters that there's really no reason he isn't better than he is. And you know, there's been injuries, so that's why I went with, WAR per 200 innings, because it's not really fair to look at raw numbers when he throws 140 innings. But, again, I think people think he's better than he is. He's really good, don't get me wrong, but he's just, he could win the AL Cy Young or NL Cy Young in any given year, but he's just not put up the numbers that puts him on even, just beneath Kershaw, Kluber, Scherzer, Chris Sale. He's comfortably in the next tier.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, at his best, he's a top five pitcher easily, but he's at his worst too often, I think, as we saw in the World Series. And then I believe his second to last start with the Rangers, he got just destroyed. Yeah. Too often to say that he's a true ace, so to speak.
Yeah, wasn't that 10 earned runs against the Marlins or something? Yep. Somebody really bad. Yep. Like it was really, really strange. And so, he's terrific, and I think if the Twins were to sign him, that would be a huge coup. But he's just not, I don't think, as good as maybe the public perception of him. I went number three, Carlos Santana. I think he's, like I say, the safest impact bat. If you sign Santana and miss out on Hosmer and Martinez, there's a fair chance you won't be upset based on the amount paid. I still think Martinez, if he can be anything close to last year, is terrific. But honestly, I think Santana, based on his on-base percentage, is pretty safe. I don't know where his defense lies at first base because, obviously the numbers don't say it's as great, but he was a finalist for Gold Glove. Where do you stand with Santana and me ranking him number three as far as best fits for the Twins?
I'm a huge Carlos Santana fan.
It's hard not to be, really.
Yeah, I think he'd fit perfectly in any lineup in that, most AL teams either have first base or DH open or open enough where they could move someone to accommodate him. Mm-hmm. And his play discipline is fantastic. He's got power. You could hit him anywhere, first through sixth in your lineup, and easily justify it.
Unless
and,
you're the Astros, then you probably hit him seventh through ninth because your offense is so good. I don't think they'll find room for him, though, between you and me.
Yeah. And then, he hits well from both sides of the plate, plays every day. No clubhouse issues as far as I can tell. So, I mean, really, he's going to get underpaid. I really think so.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably looking at, 3 years, $45 million, $460. Is that generally what you're thinking?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
I think is he as good as Edwin Encarnacion, in your opinion? I mean, is he close? Doesn't have the power, but, man, I love on-base percentage.
Yeah, I think day in and day out, he's just as good as Encarnacion. He might not be hitting massive home runs or driving in as many runs, but his quality of plate appearances is as good as anyone in the league. Over his career, he's walked 726 times and struck out only 812 times.
He's like the AL version of Joey Votto. I mean, nobody's Joey Votto, but man alive, yeah. He's probably the second best eye in baseball, right?
Yeah, in terms of his plate discipline and I'm surprised it hasn't translated into batting average more so for him.
Right.
But I mean, in terms of giving you a great at bat, he's right up there with the guys who are going to be making 20 plus million a year when they hit free agency.
So fourth, I have Jake Arrieta. I think he's the second best starter in the market. Could be the best if he gets anywhere close to where he was. He's only going to be 32 in March. So it's not impossible that he reinvents himself again. And reinvent is probably not the right word. But I don't think he's cost himself really that much money either. Maybe he's a $20 million guy or $22 million versus 25 or 26. But, you know, I think he's still on a market where there's not that many impact starters. Gonna get paid. He's going to get some years. Maybe it's not five, but it's three or four. You know, are you really cold on him? Because I know swing and strike rate down, innings down, strikeouts down, walks not where they need to be, ground balls down too, which is obviously, you know, not beneficial as well. But for me, it's so weird because starting pitchers are the kind of guys that can just make one subtle tweak and it will, I don't know, it'll just reinvent themselves or turn them back into who they were. And two, what I also wrote, Johnny Cueto is a month older than him and has thrown 600 more big league innings. So there's not a lot of MLB innings on that arm. But, you know, obviously the Cubs did ride him pretty hard that Cy Young year. You know, where do you stand on Jake Arrieta? And do you think number four in my power rankings is a justifiable spot?
Yeah, so, you know, he scares me. He does. He had a 4.67 ERA through June 27th. For the rest of the season, posted a 2.26. He did have a couple of abbreviated starts, two out of his last three regular season starts were cut short because of his hamstring injury. However, was really good was tremendous in the playoffs, really. Walks were a big issue for him, but his stuff looks great. The velocity doesn't concern me so much as just a genuine lack of command of his pitches at sometimes. The movement he gets on his pitches is still so good that it's very difficult for him at times to have any idea where it's going. Mm-hmm. You know, and that can be one inning it's there, one inning it's not. It's back the next inning. It's you know, he can be infuriating to watch at times. But in terms of raw ability and raw stuff and his ability to keep himself healthy, I think that if you can keep him to 4 years or fewer, I think that he'll be a great deal.
So you're giving him 4 and 100, 4 and 80, 4 and 90 something. Where do you stand on what you would be comfortable giving him? And do you agree with the assessment that I don't think he's cost himself? I mean, he's cost himself some money, but is it a lot?
I would prefer to give him in the 480 range. I would be comfortable getting to 88, 90, 92.
Do you think he signs that though? Like, I mean, that's Rick Porcello money, granted one less year. But if you can get a guy like Jake Arrieta for under $100 million, again, I know you're not giving him 2 years, $100 million or anything absurd like that, but that's still got to be a pretty – I mean, what's the competition level going to be among teams jockeying for him who think they can find one little tweak for him that maybe Chris Bosio couldn't? You know, do you think it's the market is going to allow him to sign for 4 years and $80 million? Because I just don't feel like that's possible.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. The way that the market's been trending in recent years is that it's continuing to suppress hitters' contracts.
Right.
I think
which we'll get to in just a second.
Since Jason Hayward, you know, his contract has been a failure so far, and but pitcher contracts are continually on the rise. I wouldn't be surprised if he got something like 5 years at $120 million. I'd be surprised if he really did come in lower than 96, 100 in that range, because right. the ceiling is just so high.
Okay, that's kind of where I'm at too. And even in his down year, though, I think he was like a 2.4 WAR for Fangraphs. For people who don't know, Fangraphs is my default WAR. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the best one. It's just because I've been with Fangraphs so long that that's the first place I look. But I assume his B WAR, you know, maybe it was a little better, but still a valuable guy. So this is where I go off the rails, and it's kind of funny. Actually, my boss at my downtown Minneapolis job just tweeted that the light rail went off the rails right outside where we work. So I'm going off the rails the same day the Minneapolis light rail is going off the rails, which is kind of funny. But number five, I have Logan Morrison, first baseman slash maybe DH, Tampa Bay Rays last year. So here's where I stand on Lomo. 245, 353, 516 last year with the Rays, 38 homers. No qualifying offer, 13.5% walk rate, and traded in some grounders for some strikeouts. Here's the big thing with him. He gave up grounders for fly balls. Grip and rip. He's probably going to sign for something absolutely ridiculous in terms of what a guy who hit almost 40 home runs is actually worth. Although I guess that value is depressed by the long ball jump that we saw this year. But am I nuts for saying Logan Morrison should be a priority for the Twins above the second-tier starting pitchers?
No, because
think about it for a minute. I'm like, oh, I hope I didn't lose him here.
Yeah, I think what I said previously about hitter contracts trending down, pitcher contracts to trend up is that, you know, you're probably not going to get 38 home runs from Lomo, but if you can get 25 and he plays a pretty good first base.
I mean, he's going to sign the Kendry Morales deal, 330 or something like that, isn't he? Nobody's going to give him $15 million a year Carlos Santana money, right?
Right. I think that, you know, based on one really, really good season, he's not going to command as much money as you might think from a guy who's
hypothetically, if you have a need at first base and you're not going to pay Eric Hosmer, what deal are you giving Morrison? 333, 335? Are we in the right vicinity here?
Yeah, I think 336 at most. I wouldn't be surprised if we had to settle for, like, 2 and 26, bit higher.
The floor here is James Loney, right? I mean, which is a fine player, 15 to 18 home runs, and, you know, won't kill you at first base. But, I think first base had like 20 some teams with 100 or better weighted runs created plus. So it's not great. Right. But if the fly ball revolution is for real, I'm all over this guy. I'm not giving up anything draft pick wise. And I don't know. I think he's a good pick for the post-Joe Mauer, pre-Brent Rooker situation, and can mix and match a DH. You know, you don't want to play him in the outfield, but I think he's a good priority. And again, a guy with a better than 100 isolated discipline, man, give him a chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
So down to starters, I got Lance Lynn and Alex Cobb in that order. I don't know that there's much differentiating them. Lynn, not as much of a strikeout guy as his numbers look, because swinging strike rate is, you know, it's 9.2% for his career, which is, I think 9.2 is okay, but not great. I don't know really context necessarily there as well as I should, but lefties gave him some trouble. He's had some trouble on the road, which a lot of guys do. He's not an ace, not in the NL. I think in the AL he has number 3 upside with innings eater floor. And then Cobb needs to get his changeup back, because he had the 4th worst swinging strike rate in the American League last year and cannot fall back on innings or starts. And so for me, that's why Lynn is a bit of a bump. You know, are those guys kind of where you're at as far as in that order and in that spot?
Yeah, I flipped Cobb and Lynn. I'm more of a fan of Cobb because I think that if he gets that changeup back, which I don't see why not.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I mean, the velocity is good.
He's better. Whereas Lynn, I think right now, he's not just going to add another pitch. All of his pitches are intact, and he's just not as good as he was. It's possible that he could just start striking guys out more.
Here's what I saw with Lynn is, yeah, you hope for more the year after returning. But the first half, the strikeouts were there, and the home runs were there. The second half, both the strikeouts and the home runs disappeared. And so did he wear down in the second half? Certainly possible. You know, the Cardinals push guys back from Tommy John pretty hard, but they're usually more established guys. Adam Wainwright was another one, I think, went over 200 innings in his first year back. But again, with guys this durable, this steady, and you know, in their late 20s, or in Lynn's case, I think 30, you know, there's not a lot of risk because of how established they are. They're not, you know, they're not kids like Reyes, and Alex Reyes. I almost said Anthony Reyes, which would have been the wrong one. You know, where you have to work those guys back a little slower. So if we think Lynn gets back to who he was before surgery, and we think Cobb gets back to before he was before surgery, you prefer Cobb then, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it's a lot closer.
Well,
I think.
Does it help that Cobb pitched in the AL? Is that part of your decision?
It does help that Cobb pitched in the AL, but it also helps Lynn that he had been a lot more durable, both in 2017 and prior to injury.
That's why it's so difficult for me to pick one or the other. I've been asked that by about 4 or 5 people, and I'm never really sure which direction to go.
At the same contract, I'd say just pick one. But I think based on the contracts that they'll earn, I think Lynn will be a riskier contract than Cobb.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But I think they'll probably get very similar contracts.
Yeah.
And I think either one of them would be a good fit for the Twins. All right. So now we're into relievers, and I'm just going to list the 5 that I have in order. You can tell me how you differ, and then I'll give you some of my other stuff, and then we'll dive into your rankings before we let you go. But I had Jake McGee number one. I think a guy left-handed with that kind of stuff, more of a reverse splits guy. So I think he could be a closer for a team in need of one. Again, you know, he's not, again, you know, Kenley Jansen or any of these ready-made closers. But when you want to find a good reliever with good stuff, he's right in there. I do have some questions about the fastball-heavy repertoire, but he was in Colorado. Mm-hmm. He's been fastball-heavy for a long time. So, you know, how long can he keep striking out batters at the rates that he has with just a heater? But anyway, I went McGee, Nicasio, Neshek, Brian Shaw, Brandon Kinstler for fits for the Twins. Not because that those guys are better than Mike Minor, Addison Reed, Brandon Morrow, or even Tyler Chatwood, I had as my final starting pitcher target. But I think for cost, I think Minor's going to get quite a bit of money, probably from the Dodgers, and we'll talk about him today as well. But as far as cost, value, and everything, I think those are my five guys in that order. Where do you sit with it? Again, I'll say it one more time. McGee, Nicasio, Neshek, Shaw, Kinstler.
Yeah, I think in terms of what the Twins need and the money that they have to spend, I think they're pretty spot on. I think a lefty is a priority to them. After that would be a guy who can give you a couple innings if needed, which would be Nicasio. And
yep.
Nicasio is also really good against lefties. First season of his career, he was.
Shaw. 544 OPS, which is really good against lefties for a right-handed pitcher.
Yep. And then you've got those three kind of workhorse-type guys in Neshek, Shaw, and Kinstler, who should easily be able to give you 65, 70 games each apiece.
Well, and Neshek, obviously Minnesota-born, Twins designated him with a poorly diagnosed injury 7-8 years ago now. I think it's time to kind of bury the hatchet there and bring him back home. I think he was the third most valuable, again, by Fangraphs War. So, you know, with relievers, that's a little bit more nebulous. But terrific season. Didn't walk anybody. Lots of strikeouts. He's cleaned up against lefties, which is hard for a guy of his arm slot. And at 37, it's not like anyone's going to want to give him a huge deal. I don't think I'd have him close, but I didn't think I'd have Kinstler or Matt Belisle close either. So who really knows?
Yep, and I think the way that Neshek and Shaw and Kinstler pitch, which they're all kind of one-pitch pitchers, Neshek slider, a little bit of sinker, Shaw with the cutter, Kinstler with the sinker, they're a lot less likely to break down than guys who throw three or four different pitches.
Yep.
They've also all have a proven track record of health the past few years, especially Shaw, and appearing in a lot of games.
What, so Brian Shaw, I guess I don't really understand. I know Fangraphs War doesn't like him, but I don't really understand why. The strikeouts are okay. The walks are good. The grounders are good. I think BABIP maybe plays a factor in it. But when I see a guy who has a 3.5 ERA with a 0.2 Fangraphs War, I always feel like there's something I'm missing. And so I look into, you know, opposing batter splits. Don't really see anything there. So here's what I said. Shaw is who he is at this point, a sturdy-as-hell middle reliever who can pitch every other day but would probably be miscast as much more than a seventh-inning guy. Virtually a fit for any bullpen, but be careful about overuse. Is that pretty close to where you're at?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty close to where I'm at. I think that...
So what am I missing in terms of Fangraphs War, though? Like, why did he have a couple years where he was like 0.4 instead of one win?
You know, I don't know. I'm looking at the page as well, and I don't know. His FIP is good. His FIP is really good. He's lower than
I mean, is it leverage? Is it? I just don't understand, because Cleveland's used him in that role, seventh, eighth inning, you know, maybe some sixth innings, but they just, I'm just a little baffled, because you know, then it's like, okay, maybe, you know, you can see guys put up numbers where they're being used as a specialist or low leverage, so it's not really like they're dipping their feet in the deep end of the pool.
Right, so this past year he was worth 1.7.
Which is huge.
And then the two prior years, 0.4 and 0.2.
That's
so
baffled. I don't get it.
You know, it might be that he was used a little more this year, that because the ball has been flying all over the place, that the pitcher value just goes up by default. But,
well, and
you know,
his home run rate dropped this year, surprisingly enough.
Yep, and I guess no matter what, you know, no matter what the WAR says, he's proven capable of pitching every other game, basically.
Yep.
And if you had a bullpen with enough depth where you could maybe give him 10 fewer appearances a year, he might be a little bit better even.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. I was a little confused by that. But anyway, that's a pretty good power ranking in my opinion. I wrote it, so I better think that. Anywhere you differ, or any other players you think the Twins should target, or positions? If you want to say positions, this might be easier because I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
As much as I know that how much Twins guys like Mitch Garver, I see him as more of a third catcher, backup first baseman, outfielder.
Hot take, they should trade for Yasmani Grandal and then extend him.
I like Castro too much for them to do that, okay, but okay. I do think they should get, like, they would benefit from kind of a backup catcher plus that you could play a little bit more often than your typical backup catcher. I think Chris Ionette is a great example of that.
Sure.
Hit lefties and give Castro, you know, a break when needed a little more often than your typical backup would.
So you're not bringing back Chris Giménez, who I think had a fairly good year, but...
Yeah, I was very surprised that they, I believe, outrighted him, and then I think they released him too. After that, I'm pretty sure he declared free agency.
It was his second outright, so he declared, yeah. He just...
Yeah, so I was surprised by that, but...
Might even be his third outright, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, apparently they're a fan of Mitch Garver, or they might want to see if they can pick somebody up on a minor league deal, maybe, yeah. You know...
Or Giménez.
Giménez will learn a little major league deal for $1 million or $2 million from somebody.
Yeah. I think Garver does do some things that Castro doesn't. He really mauled lefties at AAA, yep. And his defense has gotten some better reviews, so it'll be interesting to see, because he could be, I don't think he's much more than an average hitter, but who knows, maybe he can give him some value. Before we dive into your rankings, trade coming across the wire, not a Jerry DePoto trade, as our friend Nathan Bishop says, but Brad Boxberger being moved to the Diamondbacks in exchange for reliever or pitcher Curtis Taylor. Surprising to you that Boxberger's on the move, or not really?
No, because I know that the Rays really, really have to cut payroll right now. They're projected at $83 million. They were at $76 million at the end of last year.
Oh, and that's why they couldn't QO Lomo. I mean,
yep.
So
they just couldn't take that risk, and I think that they're gonna have to cut a lot. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make some more moves before the non-tender deadline tomorrow. They could move Brad Miller. They could move Adani Echevarria. They could even move Alex Colome and just really rebuild. They might just have to based on their payroll situation.
Yeah. With not being able to offer Lomo a qualifying offer, part of me thinks, okay, this is the system not working because teams like the Rays should get compensation. But then, you know, evil Kermit says, yeah, but Logan Morrison after 1 year really isn't the kind of guy who should get you compensation either. So I don't think this really is an indictment on qualifying offers not working. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think most teams wouldn't have given him a qualifying offer. It was just more definite for the Rays because they just couldn't risk it.
Although at that level, and maybe at that park, he gives you that same production again. I don't know. And at that number, which is what, 17.4, or is it higher than that?
Yeah, some might have been 18.1.
Okay, so yeah, so it went up. But I mean, at that level, you know, it's a reasonable value, but
yeah.
Nobody's going to give him that per year on a multi-year deal, not even close to it. So
right.
I get it. All right, into the rankings. So these are the John Becker proprietary rankings. Make sure you get expressed written consent before using them for your own purposes. At number 30, you have outfielder Jerod Dyson. So my question to you before you unveil your fits: do you think there's any chance he could land with the Royals again, who are going to need to fill in for Lorenzo Cain, who will probably leave? And I don't think they're quite ready to embrace the suck. So I have the Royals for Jerod Dyson. You do not. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I think there's a strong chance. I actually really just kind of omitted them from my likely fits list.
It's impossible to have likely fits for everybody, so I get that.
Yeah, he's... For him and the Royals, it strikes me as the kind of thing that would happen towards the end of the offseason. Once Lorenzo Cain is decided and maybe other targets that the Royals might have, and I'm not sure if he'd be willing to wait around that long. Mm-hmm. I put him on the Marlins, logic being that I'm pretty sure they're going to trade Stanton. They might do more than trading Stanton, and they're going to need somebody to play the outfield for them.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Yep, and after... declining Ichiro's option, they barely have a fourth outfielder right now, let alone someone who could start if and when Stanton's traded. So I like him as a fit for them. You know, an exciting player for, you know, the 2,000 or so fans who show up every game to come watch.
So you listed the Pirates as another fit, but the Cubs as well. I like the Cubs as the new John Jay, but also the Mariners. I think that would be a reunion. He was with the Mariners last year. Which of those teams do you feel best about it? I would assume the Pirates based on where you put them. But that's assuming probably a McCutcheon deal then, correct?
Yeah, Pirates assumes a McCutcheon deal somewhat, or they just want to give less time to Gregory Polanco and Starling Marte for some reason, maybe injury concern. Cubs, you hit the nail on the head with the kind of replacement for John Jay idea.
Albert Almora, platoon partner until he steals the job.
Mariners would be that right now their productive center fielder is Guillermo Heredia, who I'm a fan of, but probably shouldn't be starting against right-handers, whereas Gerard
really
Dyson.
Really nice player.
You know, I really like Dyson as the left-handed side of a platoon. He can steal you 30 bases playing 110 games. And yeah, I think he's a fit for a lot of teams, really.
So Dyson was a 2.1 win player for the Mariners this year, 3.1 the year before. You know, generally 2-3 for his career. Do you feel pretty confident in that? I mean, this is a guy who's never hit more than 5 home runs in a year, and in fact, that was this year. Do you feel confident in our WAR values for guys who have their games predicated on speed and contact with some defense sprinkled in? I mean, is 2.1 wins for 111 games for the Mariners pretty close to what you think he provided?
Yeah, I think the value of his defense is so good. The value of his base running is so good because not only is he really fast, he doesn't make mistakes on the bases. And he's not a good hitter, but he'll put the ball in play. And with his legs, that, you know, can mean a lot more than it would for 99% of other players. If he hits a soft little ground ball to shortstop, he can beat that out.
Yeah, 285 batting average on balls in play is probably why he had an 85 weighted runs created plus this year.
Yep.
Although, granted, that's about his career mark, too. So I think these are the kind of players, though, that good teams recognize are not going to be overpaid because they're not superstar hitters, and they flock to those guys.
Yep.
So 29th, Carlos Gomez, you have some interesting choices here. I think he goes back to Texas. I think they want to make one more run at it with Adrian Beltre on the team. But there are some other options, and you've got some interesting ones. You also have the Rangers as a likely fit. What are you seeing with him? And do you think, again, he's not the superstar that he was with Milwaukee, but he's still a pretty nice player.
Yeah, I think that he's a frustrating player, and that's where a lot of the kind of
he's always
middle,
been a frustrating player.
Middle to bottom of the list comes. It's guys who could be really, really good or just frustrate you for a month on end. I put him on the Royals, the logic being that he can be kind of ish a Lorenzo Cain light, not really, but for the Royals' money, they'll take it if they're going to try to contend. And when he's good, he's really good, and I think the Royals are going to need to be making some upside plays.
I think like Cain, he's also older than you think.
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, I want to say he's
32.
32,
I think he was born in 85. I was born in 86. And you were born born in what, like 2003?
Not 98.
I'm kidding. But when I think of players being called old around my age, I just hate it. It sucks.
I think Gomez has, in terms of, you know, he's obviously lost a step, but the power's still there.
He'd be a great, right fielder, don't you think?
Yeah, I think he would. I think he's, you know, great arm. Not enough to cover center field, but he's still plenty fast. He stole 13 bases last year, 18 the year prior. You know, he's still a guy that can give you 15 home runs, 15 steals, 250, 260, hopefully.
There's value in that, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's what they hoped Alex Rios was going to be a couple years ago.
Yeah, I kind of like that move for them. You know, if that final piece for an attempt to contend, kind of like Alex Rios was, and then they took Alex Rios to the World Series. So,
J.R. Graham hit him on the forearm and broke it, and they would have probably rather signed Torrey Hunter that year. The memory I have of Alex Rios is so strange. It was a spring training game I was at, and he walked out of the dugout in skinny jeans. And the funny thing about spring training is guys just leave the games during the game. So he walks down the right field line in skinny jeans and a tight t-shirt. And I'm just like, this is so unlike any major league game I've ever been to. And the funny thing was, the game was delayed because of bees. It was the weirdest. It was Tempe Diablo, Royals and Angels. I got to see Mike Trout hit a home run, and it was just wild. But the game was delayed because there were bees underneath the home plate camera, and they had to go get actually a legit beekeeper. So between bees and skinny jeans on Alex Rios, I tell you what, spring training is way different than...
If you want to see weird stuff and have a great time for a lot cheaper, go to a spring training game. It's great. The weather's a lot more cooperative.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona, Florida, whatever you want to do, it's a real fun time.
So 28th, you have Yonder Alonso. So the team I picked is the Royals. You don't have the Royals on your list as far as best fit, likely fit, dark horse. They're going to need to replace Eric Hosmer some form or fashion. There's just no way I see that happening. And I do think they need to rebuild. I guess part of it, too, is how much do you believe in Alonso, who is, you know, he's like the other, he's the secondary answer to Logan Morrison, who we discussed before. I'm trying to pull up his ground ball fly ball rate to see if he tweaked that at all. So actually he did the same thing as Morrison. So, very similar guys in terms of change of approach. In fact, all the way into walk rate up, strikeout rate up. Obviously, you have Morrison higher on your list. He's 17th, but pretty similar guys. I don't want to tip your hand here, but the Royals are a fit here, don't you think? Obviously, based on who you picked Morrison to sign with, you have to agree with me, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that again, upside play that could be boom or bust is the way that the Royals are going to want to go. I put him on the Red Sox just based on who above on the list, which we'll find out in our next airing. I have above Alonso to fill their kind of other hitting vacancies. Yeah. But I think that he's probably not going to hit 28 home runs again, but I think he'll fall in the 15 to 20 range. I do believe in his swing changes. I think, Saras wrote about 1,000 articles on his swing.
And you're not getting him for a Mitch Moreland deal, though, and you're going to hope for a little bit more out of him, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's hard to predict a contract for him because it was a lot of what he did in the first half, but I think he got
220
years and 20, yeah, something like that.
224 at the top.
Yeah.
So, based on your rankings, it seems like you like Morrison better. But was that really just a pick'em for you?
It was. It really wasn't, because with Morrison, we've seen that power in flashes before. Whereas Alonso's kind of came out of nowhere.
Even the minors. I mean, he'd never hit more than 12 home runs at any level. He spent years where he 15 home runs in 2010 between double and triple A, but this is really like out of nowhere. Not just like this is like Brian Dozier in the minors to big leagues out of nowhere in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of why I had to put him lower, just because you don't know what's going to happen with him.
Would you want to sign him if you were a GM?
I wouldn't want. I really wouldn't. I view him as a fallback option that I would sell.
First base, you want one of your own guys. You want to have a Joey Votto in your farm system, of course. But you're not really scouring the market for a Yonder Alonso unless it's like February 1 and it's time to fill out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. You got Pat Neshek, 27th. I'm going all in on Neshek to the Twins. I do think they should bury the hatchet. I know Derek Falvey, Thad Levine don't have anything to do with that. But, man, he is terrific. At his age, he's a good bridge to when John Curtis figures things out and a few of these other relievers. Alan Buznitz, Trevor Hildenberg are both really good in the big leagues. But the Twins do have some really intriguing minor league relief arms on the way. And so building a bridge to those guys with a guy who's going to be 37, or I think he already is 37, makes sense to me. Again, it's I think Neshek to the Twins, you don't have the Twins as a – fit, but I think it's a fit by definition of him being a reliever. What do you think about Neshek and where you want him to land?
I put him on the Diamondbacks. This was before the Boxberger trade, so I might change my mind.
Well, if you get more relievers, it's like having more pizza. There's never too much, so it's okay.
He's one of those guys who will earn a contract that will put him in the price range of literally every team.
So like what, $6 million per year, probably? Seven?
Yeah. I mean, he's not gonna get more than 2 years. So, you know, 2 years and 12, 14, 15 million is not too much for any team.
Teams should be all over that, because even if he falls apart, you just designate him, he retires, and you both move on.
Yep.
Yeah, so you got Diamondbacks, Cubs, Cardinals, Rangers, Nationals, but it's a dart throw even for Nishek, who is one of the more quirky guys when it comes to mechanics. But yeah, yeah. He could fit pretty much anywhere.
Absolutely.
So Tyler Chatwood, I'm going to steal your thunder, but we both have going to the Orioles here. I think the worst kept secret in the American League East, other than maybe the Rays payroll issues, is that the Orioles need freaking pitching. And so they're quote-unquote losing Chris Tillman. They could still bring him back, but he was just awful last year. Chatwood is interesting in that respect. And, you know, you look at the numbers away from Coors last year, and it's a much lower ERA, but the rates are still really ugly. Keith Law, who we both have as an influence of ours as far as these lists, says the way for Chatwood to figure it out is to get back to that curveball that made him such a good prospect. I think the grounders play up, get him in a park with some good defense. The Orioles can pick up grounders with the best of them. I think the Orioles is a good fit.
Yeah, and I think there's nowhere worse you could go than Coors. So, you know, some people might be saying, well, why would he pitch at Camden Yards? Well, it's better than where he's pitched.
Yeah.
And I think the Orioles, with Machado, a free agent, after the season, are going to make one last push for, you know, to kind of sneak into a wild card spot. And Chatwood's the kind of guy who can give you that upside.
And maybe you flip him on the cheap if he pitches well, and you blow it up. You know, Jeremy Hellickson. Well, that's what I think they had hoped to get out of Jeremy Hellickson instead of. I guess they got innings from him because it was after the deadline. But this will be a full year of a guy with Hellickson type upside, so to speak. He's a fit with a lot of teams who are kind of in that middle tier as far as one guy could push them into the mix or out of the mix. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Chatwood's market develops.
Absolutely.
You know, probably going to be a guy who signs you think he gets more than 1 year?
I think that some teams might think it'll take more than 1 year to fix him.
With this situation, it's kind of like Phil Hughes at the Twins, where you sign a guy with the hopes that they give you value, and then you don't want to have to pay them at that top-end value. Now, the Twins willingly did that for some reason after he gave them a good first season with Phil Hughes. But if you get him for multiple years and he's really bad, that's a downside. So maybe you get him 2 years and $14 million, something like that.
Yeah, and I think that would be the low end of my guess. I wouldn't be surprised if we got 2 and 18 to 20.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I would take him for the Charlie Morton 2-14 deal and
the Charlie
and
Morton special, yeah.
And see what I can do with that if I'm a GM.
If you can get him to throw 98 like Brent Strom got for Charlie Morton, bully for you. Juan Nicasio, number 25 for you. Really weird year for Nicasio. Bounces around with three teams. Two of them after the trade deadline, one of them after the postseason roster deadline, which is just unbelievable. But I believe it was the Pirates, if I'm not mistaken, thought that the Cardinals would deal in bad faith and didn't want to make a trade, so they flipped him to let's see if I get this right. Was it Pirates to the Phillies to the Cardinals?
Yep.
So bizarre. I also have the Twins signing him, but really this is a guy who will fit anywhere. Do you think he's good? Because I feel like there's just this pervading sentiment, that he's just not as good as the numbers say. And the numbers say he could probably close for the bottom tier of, he'd be a bottom 15 closer, which is still a really good pitcher, but is just not like a stud. I don't know. I look at his opposing batting line. I look at the grounders, the strikeouts, everything, and I say, this guy's really good, like really, really good.
He is, and I think a lot of the kind of the sentiment about that comes from his time as a failed starter. But in his career as a reliever, he's been a really, just really, really good reliever. 3.38 ERA, 187 appearances, 10 strikeouts per nine. That includes 19 relief appearances with the Rockies in 2014, during which he wasn't so good as a reliever. Mm-hmm. So is he an elite reliever? No, because he's entering his age 31 season, and it's only going to be his second just full season as a reliever. But at the same time, he's really, really good. And I put him on the Nationals with the logic being Doolittle and Madsen are really good. They're also really fragile. Nicasio has proven that he's not. Love the National League appearances. And he's the kind of guy who can also give you a couple innings when needed.
What kind of deal are you looking at? Like 2-16, 2-18?
Yeah, 2-16, 2-18, 3-24.
What's happened to the relief market where that used to be like Loogie money, like Antonio Bastardo, Tony Sipp money with, you know, again, they were more along the lines of $6 million than $8 million, but is the difference between $6 and $8 million for a reliever really that big in your mind? Maybe it is. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
Yeah, I think considering the margin of error and that, you know, you can have one blow up appearance and your ERA goes up, kind of same idea with the money for relievers, and that $8 million versus $6 million is a lot more, just considering how little they pitched relative to starters. I also think that the reason that it's gone down just a bit for that mid-tier relief market is that a lot of failures have occurred with, you know, the Bastardo contract, the Sipp contract.
Would you rather have the guys on this level or Brett Cecil?
I'd probably rather have the guys on this level, and I think Brett Cecil was on this level last year, and I think that's also an issue with Cardinals gave Brett Cecil way too much.
That's it becomes what baseball fans like to call problematic. It hurts the market. Okay. So is Nicasio going to close for somebody next year, or is he going to be one of those nice 7th-8th inning guys?
If he closes for someone, I think it's an issue, because he's either A, signing for a team that is not in contention, A, or B, that the team's closer got hurt. So,
okay, but he would close for the Twins, though. I mean, who would you have close for the Twins at this moment? Trevor Hildenberger, or would you sign someone?
I would sign someone. And I guess the Twins are the one exception of a contending team who would have Nicasio as their closer.
Is he good enough to do that?
Yeah, I think he is good enough to do that, but I think you'd rather not pigeonhole him into the 9th inning when he's the kind of guy who can get you 5 outs in the 7th and 8th.
Okay.
If needed.
So he's like Yusmeiro Petit, maybe with fewer innings, but a little more effective.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got Mike Minor 24th. I think he's going to be a fascinating free agency case. You have him on the Dodgers. I have him on the Dodgers. I think everybody's got him on the Dodgers. But is the door closed on him starting? Because I feel like it kind of has to be. But he was just so good as a reliever besides.
Yeah, I think it has to be. I'm sure he'd like it not to be, but he was too good as a reliever and missed two full seasons. Just building him back up to being a starter.
Payoff wouldn't be that good, I don't think.
The payoff wouldn't be that good. He was awesome in 2013 as a starter, but that will have been 5 seasons ago at the start of
you would have been in junior high back then. That's how long ago it was.
So you really just don't – I don't think you want to mess with that.
I keep seeing 4 years and $28 million. That seems really long to me.
I'd rather give him 3 years and $28 million.
I think I would too. Honestly, if it's going to come, I don't want that 4th year. I just don't. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dodgers, though, I mean, he fits everywhere. He didn't fit on the Twins in my power rankings because I think the cost is going to be high. I think people look at what he did last year and they're like, holy crap, this guy's really good as a reliever.
Yeah, I agree.
You got Cargo at 23. I don't know, because here's the deal. You look at this triple slash for Cargo with the Rockies last year, and it's 262, 339, 423. That's like the average hitter special. Well, with the Rockies, though, that is an 84 weighted runs created plus. Do you think we're over-penalizing Rockies hitters with rated runs created plus, or is it legit that he just wasn't very good last year?
I think the WRC plus is right. I don't think, however, that it accounts for the fact that hitters who played at Coors are worse on the road as a Rocky, just because they're not used to seeing that type of movement on pitches as often as every other hitter in baseball. So maybe it averages out. Maybe okay, he'll get worse at home because it's not Coors Field anymore, but he'll get better on the road because he's not playing at home at Coors Field anymore.
So what if it's Camden Yards? Because that's the park you picked. I'm picking the Rays. Is he still good is, I guess, the point I'm dancing around. I don't think he's durable necessarily, but I think he could be a pretty good player. And he's really he's 2 years removed from hitting 40 bombs. I mean, if that's not the Tampa Bay Rays special, that's you know, you've got some pretty good fits here too.
Yeah, I mean, the athleticism is there. The power has still been there. The fielding is below average, but he's flashy enough at times. He can make a big play for you.
The walk rate spiked this year too, which is intriguing if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd throw, you know, a 1 year, $9 to $12 million, kind of make good contract at him and see what happens.
12 is what I was at too. Yeah, I think that's going to be an intriguing landing spot. So you have Orioles, Rays, Mets, Marlins. Obviously, the Marlins are going to be a skeleton crew if Derek Jeter and company get their way. But I like all those fits. It's going to be an intriguing market for hitters. To get off the path just a little bit, are teams going to be upset they spent as much for J.D. Martinez when maybe obviously not as good of hitters, but guys turn into fairly good hitters for a lot less money? Like, here's what I'm saying. There's a non-zero chance that J.D. Martinez is outperformed by Carlos Gonzalez next year. Again, it's not likely, it's not certain, but it could happen. J.D. Martinez has not always been healthy, and he's a really great hitter, but he's probably not going to slug nearly 700 next year. Do you think there's going to be buyer's remorse with Martinez?
No. I mean,
so you're sold on him?
I'm sold on him enough. I don't think you can ever be fully sold on somebody, but I don't think any team is going to regret the contract right after he signs it or right after seeing
it. And that's the timeline that Gonzalez is on. Right. What I worry about is corner outfielders, bad fielders, who are, I don't want to say one-trick ponies, but he can hit. He gives you nothing really else. That contract could get pretty ugly, could it not?
Yeah, it could. I mean, but also,
if it's 7 years and 160 million, that could get ugly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure I wasn't off my rocker. We'll hit up on J.D. Martinez here, you know, in the next day or so. 22 on your list, C.C. Sabathia. Very bare list for you, which I think I actually agree with. We both have him going back to the Yankees. It almost feels like he's at this Hiroki Kuroda part of his career where it's 1 year with the Yankees for $12 million and it just renews. Like, I don't know, like your credit card comes to you every 2 years, you know, just automatically to start over. I don't know. I think the Yankees are the best fit, and if they go in another direction, you've got some intriguing fits besides.
Yeah, I think... I almost put him on the Yankees out of default just because there seems to be so much comfort there on both ends.
Justifiably so.
Just with the you know, I don't want to say durability, but with the consistency he's put up over the past few years, you know, he'd be a great number four, number five for any team in baseball, which is, you know, the only reason the Yankees have the leg up is because there's that comfort there.
Do you buy him as a decent pitcher moving forward? I mean, at some point it's all going to come crashing down, but he's interesting. I mean, I think he's moved to more of a sinker approach. He doesn't throw as hard as he used to. And we're always going to have questions about his conditioning, but he pitches well in that frame. I think he might even be a little underrated.
Yeah, there's no reason to believe that he's just right away going to crash and burn kind of thing. So, yeah, I think he's underrated in that.
Is he the Carlos Santana of pitchers on this market? Or is he riskier than that?
I mean, he's not as risky because of the smaller contract he's going to come in, and he's not as good as Santana. But in terms of, I think, expectation versus the contract he'll get, I think we'll probably get a little bit underpaid.
Well, but also safe. I mean, he's not going to blow up and have a 6 ERA and be designated
first.
Like, I feel like you can go out and sign a Lance Lynn for $90 million. I don't think he'll get $90 million, but if he gets the Rick Porcello deal or C.C. Sabathia gets 1 year and 15, the regret is going to be way, way, way less, even relatively speaking, because, again, right, one-year deals aren't bad, for C.C. if you have to designate him on July 1st. I just feel like C.C. is stable and
absolutely
Bulldog, you know, all the things you say about these guys who've been in the league forever and just keep producing. His career has been amazing. He was the one who faced Joe Mauer in Joe Mauer's MLB debut, and he was already a veteran at that point. I mean, that's how long he's been in the big leagues. So yeah, I think he's going to be a really fascinating case, but it might be a boring one if he just goes back to the Yankees. 21st, you have Addison Reed, not too badison. I'm sorry, I'm going to try to delete that. you have him to the Dodgers. Sorry, I blew your cover there. I have him to the I said Astros. The Astros need to address their bullpen, I think, and so I just took a stab there. Again, relievers, it's going to be hard to say. But what are you seeing with Reed? I think he's, you know, he doesn't throw as hard as he used to, but he's a sturdy middle reliever. He's not really Brian Shaw, but, you know, he's good. He's just good. There's lots of fits for guys like that.
You know, the home run ball concerns me. The lower velocity concerns me, which gives him, both of them give him a smaller margin for error. But I mean, ultimately he's a good pitcher who spots his stuff well, has good off speed pitches. I wouldn't give him a 4-year deal like some people think he'll get, but I'd be comfortable giving him 3.
Do you think the Astros will be in that mix?
Yes, because the way that Ken Giles pitched in the postseason, I don't know if they should necessarily get a guy who's definitely going to be a closer to replace him outright, but I think that they should definitely get someone who could push him for the job.
To that end, Brandon Morrow is an interesting fit as well, and obviously they saw him up front, up close and personal in the World Series. We'll get to him in just a second. Before we get to him, though, Wellington Castillo had a nice little year with the Orioles, and if you want an offensive-minded catcher, he's kind of your guy. I have him to the A's, you have him to the A's. But there are some interesting fits. I got to ask you, though, you have Diamondbacks on the list. That's a team that non-tendered him last year. What went into that thought process?
So my thinking was, since they have Jeff Mathis to catch for, you know,
imagine
if I were to assign, I'd have Mathis catch for Greinke and Taiwan Walker and Zach Godley, and I would have Castillo catch for Robbie Ray and Patrick Corbin.
Would you rather have Castillo or Iannetta if you're the Diamondbacks?
I'd rather have Iannetta because Iannetta was almost as good of a hitter and seemed to get better results out of the pitchers than Castillo did.
Well, I think he's one of those guys who had good framing, then bad framing, and then good framing again, did he?
Yep.
So,
whereas Castillo has kind of also been the same in his career. He had one year, I think 2012, 2013, with like ridiculously good framing with the Cubs for some reason. And since then has kind of been on the decline. But as framing has kind of gone under more scrutiny in recent months over, it's kind of, you know, how good is the data?
Yeah.
It's something I kind of have low on my list of considering.
So with framing, I guess for me, if I don't trust the run values, I can still maybe trust the rankings, you know?
Yes.
So if I see a guy at number 1 and a guy at number 5, I'm not going to necessarily think a guy's 12 runs above average or whatever, but I might be able to say that number 1 is better than number 5 with a 95% degree of certainty. Would you say that's where you're at,
I think,
or something like
you
that?
You know, it's similar with any, you know, statistic based on, you know, I don't want to say the abstract, but
the umpire calls are abstract. I think you're totally right.
I think any value-based statistic, you can't definitively say that, you know, the number 5 is definitely worse than the number 1. But if you look towards the bottom of the list, you can say with a lot of confidence, okay, this guy's worse than the guys at the top of the list. And I think that if you look at it kind of zoomed out a little bit, your confidence increases.
Do you think teams have proprietary data that is much better than ours as far as catcher defense?
Oh, I would be shocked if they didn't.
That's kind of what I was thinking, but I wanted.
You know, I don't know what they're, you know, if they're, they have technology that they put on catchers while they catch bullpens or stuff like that. But I think with just about every statistic that we have, there's at least a handful of teams out there with what they think is a better version.
Yeah. So number 19, I kind of teased it. We got Brandon Morrow. Actually, back to Castillo for a second. You have the Rockies. Is that a fallback to, not Holland, Lucroy, Jonathan Lucroy?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think that. They'll definitely go for Lucroy first. We'll talk more about that. Do the top 15 later on. But I think, that was my thinking.
Okay, how about the White Sox? Because I got to ask you, they've been looking for a catcher forever. I don't even remember their last good catcher. It's probably Ron Karkovice for all I know. But they did have – I'm scrolling to their depth chart right now. I'm going to be 100% transparent, the transparency in podcasting act here – Omar Narvaez had an interesting, like, I think he had a good on-base percentage year. Almost looked like a poor man's Francisco Cervelli. Now, I don't think he's nearly as good a defender. I don't know. I haven't dug into him. But do you think they're on the lookout for starting caliber catching or a good guy who can kind of push someone else? Or what do you kind of think?
Somewhere in the middle. I don't think they want a guy where it's like, oh, he's definitely going to be our starter. Nor do they want a guy where he's definitely going to be our backup. So, you know, either push a starter or the backup plus kind of rule I talked about earlier when we were discussing the twin situation.
So piecing it together kind of like the Braves did last year with Suzuki and Flowers maybe?
Yeah, something like that I think would be good for them, provided that the pitchers, you know, are fine working with two different catchers, you know, whenever needed, because that's most important for a rebuilding team.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So anyway, Brandon Morrow, you have going to the Cubs, I have the Nationals. I think we're on the same page here, though, of these are bullpens on contending teams that are just going to have to address probably in some form or fashion one spot. The Cubs with Davis leaving, are they going to have Morrow close, in your opinion? Do you trade for a closer? Like a Zach Britton, what do you do if you're the Cubs, and is Morrow your guy, or are you looking for a different guy to close?
I think Morrow falls into that push someone else out of the role or compete for the role kind of thing. I mean, he's either going to be your closer, or he's going to be your top setup man.
But I mean, you can't have Carl Edwards Jr. close. The walk rate was off the charts last year.
Yeah, you really probably can't. So I think with the case of the Cubs, he would be their closer. With the case of the Nationals, maybe he wouldn't be. You know, he kind of is right on that border of maybe roughly half the teams he closed, the other half he wouldn't.
Okay. But I mean, he's a fit just about anywhere. So he's just a guy who signed a minor league deal and basically was lights out.
Yep.
How stable do you think that is? Are you giving this guy $10 million per year?
I think if you can stay healthy, there's no reason to believe that the performance can't continue the way that it's been based on what I've seen from him.
Do you give him like saves incentives or something? I mean, what do you do?
That's tough because you don't want to telegraph to a player like, hey, we think you're going to get hurt.
True. Although I think if he doesn't sign, he doesn't sign. And that's the breaks, I guess.
I think that he's kind of like the right-handed minor in the sense of, no track record of health over the past three seasons until this season, but was just so good that someone's going to pony up the money.
So 2 years and an option, maybe.
Yeah, 2 years and an option, maybe 224 with a option for another 12 or 13. I know that's a high average annual value, but I wouldn't want to go beyond.
It feels high, but at the same time, it feels sane because it's not a 4 year $60 million or anything like Wade Davis might get. Or Greg Holland, you know, because that market's going to be weird. Maybe I'm blowing up what they're going to get. But it feels high, but at the same time sane. Kind of like, didn't Andrew Jones sign a 2-year deal with like the Dodgers that was pretty high, but it was 2-year deal, so you don't really feel all that worried about it?
Yeah, I think it was. I want to look into that now because it was a very interesting deal.
I don't remember what the total was.
It was 30 something. It was
2 and 36, maybe. I don't know. But I mean,
yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
When you can get a
2 and 36. So yeah,
I mean, so that's insane.
I think I kind of like the idea of contracts like that, where you pay a much higher average annual value, but your commitment's over much sooner.
So number 18 on your list, one of my favorite baseball spoonerisms, Fraud Treasure. Todd Frazier, you have a couple interesting landing spots. I actually concur. This is a team that's going to be very intriguing this year because of how much talent they have, because of how little production they got out of third base. But the San Francisco Giants, who were playing the decayed remains, and I don't even feel bad about saying it, of Pablo Sandoval at third base down the stretch. And again, this is a team that couldn't even get playing for the number one overall draft pick right by winning on the last day of the season and allowing the Tigers to back their way in. But I think Todd Frazier's a perfect fit for this Giants team.
Yeah, I think, you know, whether they contend or not, he's a great guy to have around. And he won't command more than a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I was gonna say 2-year deal, $25 million maybe.
Yeah, so I think, you know, he's good for the will we or won't we contend teams that you could keep him or trade him or not. You know, the kind of see where it goes route. He can play first base for you if needed.
Maybe he'll play for his hero, Derek Jeter, in Miami.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. We always obviously have that, wasn't he Tom's River?
Little yes, League, every ESPN telecast with Todd Frazier, you're going to be hearing about that. But I think that he's a good mid-level guy that could go either way in terms of contender or not contender.
Seems like a good glue guy. I think, you know, teammates like him.
Yeah.
He can hit, you know, low average as far as drags down his OBP a little bit, but good defender. I almost get like a Matt Holliday vibe from him, that he'll be valued as a guy and as a hitter, as opposed to maybe what he'll provide on the field, in terms of finer points, whether it's walks or anything like that. So you have Logan Morrison 17th. I kind of killed your vibe with that. I have Red Sox, you have Royals, flip-flopping Yonder Alonso, but I think whoever's on the first base market is going to be back and forth between those two guys. Do you think Logan Morrison is a good guy in the clubhouse? Because his Twitter account, which I don't even know if it's still up or not, was really strange.
Yeah, I don't think it's been up for like 3 years at least.
Okay, because I don't follow a lot of people.
I haven't heard like anything bad from a teammate perspective. So as weird and as, I guess, hostile at times his Twitter account was.
Well, we know the guys that are quirky doesn't mean that the teammates won't like them because, right. You know, I mean, players have bad social values and it doesn't really make any difference if players like them or not on their team. So I can't say he's a bad egg. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Right. I my guess would be that it's not an issue. And we already talked a lot about his impact a lot earlier. But I think, you know, he's obviously, despite the 38 home runs, more of a mid-tier to low mid-tier guy just based on his lack of a track record and injury history.
Do you want him as a GM, just like I asked you about Yonder Alonso?
I would want him more, yeah.
Yeah, me too. And the other thing I think is, I have to ask, is how many years are you willing to go to get this guy? With the understanding that you won't have to go that far, but do you prefer 2 years or 3 years? Do you prefer higher money up front? What you know, where do you stand if you're structuring a deal for him as a GM?
I think I just about always prefer a shorter deal at a higher average annual value. I would rather give him 2 years and $26 million. Than 3 years and $30 million or something like that.
Those are the numbers I was pretty much thinking of.
But, you know, it's tough because, again, you know, not much of a track record. But, you know, 38 home runs is a pretty amazing thing. So he's a very, very interesting case.
So we have OPS plus, we have weighted runs created plus. If we had home runs plus and we had to scale him to a regular run environment, how many home runs do you think he really hit last year?
Ooh,
I mean, was he? Do you feel confident he hit 30 legit home runs last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he proved he has legitimate like 30 home run power.
I mean, at his body type and size, it's not surprising he hit that many home runs.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not like it's some, you know, little guy hitting fence scrapers, kind of like Brad Miller did a couple of years ago. I think that the power is legitimately there. It's just a matter of, you know, can he physically make enough contact with the ball enough to do that? So,
yeah, that's something I'm we'll in find on. Out. Well, the last one we got for this episode is Neil Walker, another fun spoonerism at Wheel Knocker. But number 16, you have him going to the Brewers. I have him going to one of your likely fits as the Angels. I think the Angels are going to be in on a second. I'm pretty sure they are. They really have no reason not to be in on second baseman because they need to build a team around Mike Trout that can be carried by Mike Trout into the postseason. So at second base, I think they end up with either a Neil Walker, an Ian Kinsler. I think the Angels are going to trade for or sign someone to play second base, and I think that this is the fit here for them in that Walker is a pretty great player who I don't think is going to be crazily overpaid.
Yeah, I think that he's very underrated, in part due to the fact that he's had struggles staying on the field. the past couple of years, 113 games, 2016, 111 games, 2017. But he gets on base, he hits home runs, he'll hit a few doubles for you. I'm looking, he only hit 9 doubles in 2016, which was kind of amazing.
Hard to believe, really.
But the pop's there, good enough from the right side, but he's better from the left.
Is he a decent defender at second base? I mean,
he used to be, and he's gotten kind of worse as he's aged, as expected. I like him more as a kind of loose starter at second base, maybe a Matt Carpenter type, where you can move him around between second, third, and first as needed. I feel like he'd profile better on the corners at this point, but I don't know if he's necessarily willing.
Is there any way he's got a Daniel Murphy-style breakout in him?
I don't think so, just because Daniel Murphy.
Maybe that's crazy. I don't know. I'm just pushing some buttons here. But
yeah, Daniel Murphy had a quantifiable swing change that, you know, manifested itself in the postseason, where it was like, holy crap, Daniel Murphy came out of nowhere. I think Walker is a pretty known quantity at this point, but it's a good guy to have.
How much does it hurt that he plays second base? Because the bat is capable. I mean, 115 weighted runs created plus is nothing to shake a fist at, but as we saw with the Brian Dozier market last year, teams just aren't really looking for second baseman. I mean, they have who they have, and they're a contender, or they're happy to go with a utility guy. You know, when the Tigers trade Ian Kinsler, they're going to go with someone like Dixon Machado, who we don't know anything about. So second base is one of those positions that teams aren't really chomping at the bit to fill with a truly great player.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's tough for him that he plays second base, but it's also good for him that he plays third and first base. So I think that it kind of negates it, and I think that he will get a deal. But for a guy as consistent as he's been the past 3 years, he'll probably get a little bit underpaid. I think 2 years and $24 million is about what he'll get at most.
That seems low to me. And not, no, I'm not saying it won't be that. I'm saying, for a guy who has been a 2.5 win, probably on average player for like 6 years in a row now.
Yeah.
7 years in a row, or 8 years in a row, 2010, all the way back to then. It's a nice player. And I think teams will be happy and glad they signed him. I don't know anything about his personality as far as being a clubhouse slash glue guy. But as far as a player, man, he looks stellar.
Yeah.
So I don't think any team that signs him is going to be upset. There won't be buyer's remorse on Neil Walker. Well, as a spoiler, we're going to go starter and reliever heavy here on the next 15. Obviously, these are the guys that people are really excited about. So let's get together real soon and do the rest of this list. What do you think?
Absolutely. If you have any disagreements with my picks or Brandon's picks, you can always chat with us nicely on Twitter. I'm sure we'd both be happy to discuss it. But yeah, just know that
John Becker underscore, right?
Yep. And just know that we will argue heavily because our predictions are correct. But
I'll probably just mute people because I like to do that. So Brandon underscore Warren, though, if you have picks or predictions you want to get in, feel free to send them in. We'll probably ignore them, but that's okay. All right. So, John, thanks for your time, and we'll get together again real soon.
All right.
You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.